There's a showdown looming in Alberta over parental rights in education.
The real issue here is, should the government be allowed to withhold information from parents when their child is struggling?
On the feature today, an interview with a Christian school principal about an announcement last week from Education Minister David Egan. In the news, the Ontario government has introduced the Safe Access to Abortion Services Act. In Ottawa, the Liberals are under increasing scrutiny over who gets to chair the Status of Women Committee. ARPA has filed its legal factum to the Supreme Court in a case involving church discipline, and the U.S. Congress has passed a major piece of pro-life legislation.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
The Ontario government is out with its long-promised bubble zone law. The Safe Access to Abortion Services Act sets strict limits around protests outside abortion clinics in that province. Tabitha Ewart is an articling student with We Need a Law.
It creates access zones around abortion clinics automatically, about a 50-meter access zone, which can be made up to 150 meters. And then hospitals and other places where abortions are performed or where the abortion pill is prescribed can also apply to get an access zone around them as well. And it prohibits all pro-life messaging without exception. It all becomes illegal in these zones.
Ewart says the bill may end up in court at some point, but for now, the efforts will be focused on political lobbying.
We're going to focus on trying to not get the bill passed. We're going to be lobbying MPPs. We also recommend all our supporters to go and send the easy mail to their MPPs in Ontario. But if it does pass, there's a potential for a legal challenge.
One small piece of the bill that hasn't been getting a lot of attention, the Ontario government is using this law to respond to a court ruling earlier this year, a ruling in favor of ARPA and pro-life blogger Patricia Maloney. The ruling said the Ontario government could not arbitrarily withhold all abortion statistics under the Freedom of Information Act. This new bill seems to acknowledge that.
It replaces the complete exclusion of abortion information with that information relating to abortion cannot be released if it identifies individuals or facility. The second exclusion they have is that if the information could reasonably be expected to threaten the health or safety of an individual or the security of the facility, that's a bit of an unknown. We're still analyzing what exactly that means in this context.
There's an easy mail link up at the ARPA website for Ontario residents to contact their provincial representatives. Quite a bit of furor on Parliament Hill last week over the appointment of a new chair for the Status of Women Committee. By convention, the chair is always occupied by a non-government member, and Conservative leader Andrew Scheer had nominated his women's issues critic, Lethbridge MP Rachel Harder. However, when the nomination first came before the committee, Liberal and NDP members walked out, protesting that Harder was pro-life, and because of that, wasn't able to properly represent women's issues. The committee reconvened last week and voted down Harder's nomination. They then nominated another Conservative, Karen Vecchio, to the position. Vecchio didn't want the nomination, but she couldn't get the required unanimous consent from the committee to decline, so she ended up with the appointment. The episode has sparked multiple accusations that the Liberals are undemocratically imposing a pro-abortion agenda on the committee, with op-eds and columns to that effect appearing in the National Post, the Globe and Mail, and even on the CBC website. We Need a Law is Anna Niethuis.
Well, that's been really interesting to see that all the media basically understands this doesn't make sense if you're talking about promoting women and empowering women to shut a woman down because you don't like her opinion. They're saying, no, this is not okay. We have other parties there because we want to hear other voices. People are electing these voices and we want to let them have that voice, which is encouraging, actually, to see that.
Anna says this entire episode is also positive in that it's setting the stage for a national debate on the need for a so-called international standards abortion law.
People are thinking about it, and they're talking about it without immediately jumping to pro-choice or pro-life. They're jumping to what's actually right. So then something like the international standards law, which does take a really reasonable approach of regulating abortion in line with so many other countries that we are similar to in a lot of other ways, people might be willing then to consider it.
We've got links up to some of the media commentary on the Harder nomination at the Lighthouse News homepage this week. ARPA lawyer John Sikkema has delivered the final paperwork to the Supreme Court of Canada in the Wall case. That's the one involving a Jehovah's Witness congregant who wants the courts to overturn his disfellowshipping, essentially his excommunication from a JW congregation near Edmonton.
They're saying that basically just being a member in a church is essentially contractual, and courts, of course, enforce contracts. And so in this case, he expected, in return for participating in church, to be treated a certain way. He's alleging that they broke their side of the bargain by not treating him fairly. And then they're saying that's enough of a contract for the court to say, we can review if you guys have stuck to the terms of your agreement.
Sikkema filed a 12-page factum, a summary of the legal arguments that ARPA is presenting, in opposition to the idea that judges have any right to rule on cases of church discipline.
You can't reduce a church in its essence to just a contract. Churches claim authority over people not based on a kind of voluntary agreement, but based on the authority that Christ gives to the church, which is a spiritual authority. Churches have a claim to authority just like the state does. The church respects the state's sphere of authority just as the state, including judges, should respect the church's sphere of authority.
The case will be heard at the end of November. ARPA will have 5 minutes to present oral arguments. And finally, a major development for the pro-life movement down in the States. The American Congress has voted to pass a new law called the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. We need a law director, Mike Schutten.
This is an act that would essentially ban abortion after 20 weeks. In its current form, it includes exceptions, I think, for rape and incest and for the health of the mother. So this obviously is not favorable from a pro-life perspective, but as we've been saying up here in Canada, it's certainly better to save some than save none. So we view this as a very positive step in the country just south of us.
Schutten says pro-lifers in the U.S. took a very deliberate lobbying tactic to get lawmakers to even consider this bill.
The significant and exciting part of this is that the pro-life movement in the United States has been very effective at keying in on the pain, the fetal pain, and the reality that we know that at 20 weeks, fetuses recoil from pain. They feel pain in a similar way that you or I would, and they've used that to really build public support for this Pain-Capable Unborn Protection Act.
The question, though, is whether the law will ultimately pass. President Donald Trump has indicated he'll sign it if it hits his desk, but the Senate is not making this a big priority. That means it could be months before anything happens. And even then, Schutten says, pro-lifers might be forgiven for being a little bit skeptical.
We've seen a lot of pro-life legislation in the United States be introduced and passed, but then to be struck down by the courts. And I think that this piece of legislation, if it passes through all the three legislative bodies, will be subject to a court challenge at some point. And we're not exactly sure what would transpire then. And I think there is a certain degree of skepticism also because in the past, when pieces of legislation have been introduced, one or more of the three bodies haven't passed them. So I think it's okay to have that skepticism, although this time around, the White House seems more favorably disposed to this type of legislation than previous administrations.
This is the third time a bill like this has been introduced in Washington. There's a showdown looming in Alberta between the provincial government and parents who choose not to send their children to public schools. Last week, Education Minister David Egan put forward a plan to introduce a bill that would make it a crime for all schools, including private, independent, and Christian schools, to communicate with parents if children decide to join so-called gay-straight alliance clubs or if those children admit to struggling with gender identity issues. The bill is expected to be introduced before Christmas. To talk about this, I've reached Keith Penner. He's the principal of the Living Waters Christian Academy in Spruce Grove, just outside of Edmonton. First of all, Keith, welcome to the program.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
The new developments in Alberta in the past week, they've been coming for a while. Fundamentally, what's new in what the minister is now saying?
What is new is that he has decided that he doesn't have the legislative authority to do what he's wanted to do. And so now he's going to propose legislation to give him the authority to do what he wants to do. And what he's proposing is based on a lot of misinformation, and we wish that the other part of it would get out.
So what is the other part? What's really happening in private schools in terms of safe and caring policies, as he calls them?
Well, he's mentioned in the press that he's been consulting with schools and that we have been refusing to provide safe and caring school policies. This is false. We have safe and caring school policies. We submitted our policies to the government in March of 2016, well over a year ago, and we have heard nothing from the government regarding these policies. Our policies clearly state that we will provide safe and caring support for all of our students. Our policies define bullying and that it will be dealt with appropriately. And they also clearly state that all actions, programs, and policies will take place within the framework of the faith and community values of the school. And this is why parents choose to send their kids to our schools, because they agree with, they value the approach that the school is taking. And so our policies state that we will use that as the way we support schools and work with parents. That's what he doesn't like, because we're not saying that we'll do it the way he wants to do it. We're saying we'll do it to reflect the parental values and the faith community that parents have chosen. So for us, it's a question of really integrity and what works.
The minister says that these schools are not supporting students. Is that even fair?
No. Alberta Education's own survey data clearly demonstrates that independent schools have higher than provincial averages for satisfaction from students, parents, and teachers regarding their safety, their culture, the support that there is for students within these schools. Independent schools are monitored regularly by Alberta Education, and Alberta Education regularly puts in writing in their feedback just how great the culture is, how positive and supporting it is for students in these schools.
So the minister says he's going to amend the school act to make it illegal for schools to out students who want to join a GSA or something like that. Fundamentally, just review it for us again. Why should we be concerned about this?
Well, this is something that I believe is deeply disturbing, and it should be for all Albertans and actually all Canadians. The minister is threatening to impose legislation that makes it illegal for schools to communicate with parents. Well, studies and, of course, common sense tells us that students thrive most fully, they're the healthiest, through all of the challenges of growing up and becoming adults when they have the support of their families. Any law that places institutions over family, that means even schools over families, any government that assumes from the starting line that families are not safe or that they're dysfunctional or inadequate to support their own children should be deeply, deeply disturbing to society. We know that there are families that are struggling, and there's already legislation in place to support children who may be in a threatening home environment. But for the government to assume as a default that families are dysfunctional and that schools must not, that it will become illegal for them to communicate with these families and with parents, we should be at our heart just deeply disturbed and resisting this. It's not a good trend.
I have to ask, is the minister ratcheting this stuff up because he thinks it's a politically popular thing to do? I mean, is there any evidence that this notion of stripping parental rights has broader public support outside of the LGBTQ and trans community?
Well, I don't think that he has the support beyond his own little room of counselors. Albertans in general believe in family. They believe in parents raising their kids to be healthy and successful and thriving. And this idea that the government knows best is really not popular. What's happening, though, is the message is being engineered and twisted. The rhetoric is divisive. It's meant to put people on a defensive position. If you come to somebody and say, so you think it's okay to out students? Well, everyone is thrown back on their heels and goes, well, it's just such a negative concept. The real issue here is, should the government be allowed to withhold information from parents when their child is struggling? That's the real key question here. And the answer to that is unequivocally no, they should not be allowed to do that.
We've all heard the old saying that he who pays the piper calls the tune. What's the response to the notion that with government funding, and independent schools in Alberta and homeschoolers as well get considerable government funding, with that funding comes a certain right by the government to impose certain restrictions? Should Christian schools or homeschoolers be prepared to walk away from that government funding in exchange for more parental freedom? Is that what this is going to come down to?
Well, there again, we're talking about a complex question. The minister just recently made this one of his points. They get public money, therefore they must abide by the law. Again, not a lot of clarity or recognition that the complexity of it is independent schools and homeschoolers are providing the safest, most caring environment for their kids. So the idea that the government would really bring out a big hammer and say, if you don't abide by our new laws and restrictions, we're going to pull the funding, it's sad and unfair. To be put in a position where we have to say we forego any funding to provide this quality education, I think that becomes a very, very sad state for Alberta and for freedom and parental choice and all the things we value as Albertans.
Keith, we're out of time. Thank you so much for this.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you. Great to share.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by going to our homepage, www.lighthousenews.ca, and clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the page. Or you can send us an email, Lighthouse News at arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again next week for another edition of Lighthouse News.